Life can always use more Cedar Point. And right now, you can get more Cedar Point for less with the Fun Day Bundle for just $74.99. Each bundle gets you admission, parking, and all-day dining for one low price. That means more coasters like Steel Vengeance and more nostalgic fun in the boardwalk area. But you better hurry because this bundle won't last. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
Guys, happy Friday, and thank you for joining another special episode of Your Welcome. You know, we got a lot to dig into on today's episode. I'm going to give you an update on a friendly hacker. Plus, I got some not-so-friendly advice for Darren Till, and I'm going to discuss Nate Diaz's other path to the UFC. But before we get to all that, let's start with this. Dana White, you son of a gun. He did it again. It was right in front of me, and I knew something was happening here, by the way. I knew something was going on. I didn't know what it was. It was just right in front of me. The Sphere. Gonna go to the Sphere. Already has paid $16 million in buying the necessary equipment from a production standpoint. It is such an undertaking that he will never be coming back. All right. So I had a hard time with it. I'm like, man, you're already $16 million. Like, he sounded like he wasn't done. He already $16 million. I'm going, can you just do that one time? Like, can you justify doing that one time? Is this equipment that you bring to the Sphere, but then you can take other places? I mean, I just had a lot of questions about that. I had a lot of questions about that number. And why are we so set that it's one time? There's never been a venue that Dana's gone to. Oh, it's one time. Madison Square Garden, by example, you know, the Mecca. We're going there one time. Fight Island, for example. And now you're in the Sphere, which is in Las Vegas. And the Sphere is all the rave right now. And if you guys go to Las Vegas, you'll understand that. But it is a special piece of architecture. Why one time? That almost sounds like the very execs that run the Sphere that you're doing business with, almost like the relationship's not going to be great if you come out and say that. Why one time? Why did he say one time? And they did another interview one time. And he did another interview one time. All right, great. Hold that thought. 2 days ago, Michael Chandler came out, called out Nate Diaz. Two of the biggest stars in the sport are now discussing it, and it's got to be for the Sphere. Conor McGregor has attempted to get on the Sphere numerous times. Numerous times, to the point that 300, at least amongst us, at least amongst the community and narratives and dialogue, 300 was less of an interest or an importance to McGregor than the Sphere. Now we've got a women's title fight that we believe is going to take place. And for it to take place, we're going to have the greatest marketing vehicle our industry has ever had, which is known as the Ultimate Fighter. That's going to draw into it. We've got a dream match, champion versus champion, right? That is Hogan versus Warrior. Both guys walk to the ring with a belt, Max Holloway, Ilya Topuria. And the only question is, will both belts be up? Like, that's big. This is big stuff. Dustin Poirier today has weighed in and is also talking about the Sphere. Ige and Lopez, that stole everybody's attention 2 weeks ago, asked for one thing. Hey, if I got any goodwill, if we did something here that you guys liked by doing this, here's the favor we want. We both want the Sphere. Then you, the media that misinterpreted Dana's response, believes it's going to be a rematch of Lopez and Dan Ige for the Sphere. But you misinterpreted Dana's quote so badly that might be exactly what he does. Like, Dana was asked that question. Hey, both these guys want the Sphere. And Dana said, man, I'll give these guys whatever they want. Yeah, I'll do the Sphere for those guys. It wasn't together. Is the only point that I'm trying to make. That was a misunderstanding, but it's been misunderstood, reported, and re-reported so many times. That might be exactly what they do. And what is my point? Well, my point is, all of these guys are coming out of the woodwork. More champions, more top draws have requested the Sphere than they did 300, than they did International Fight Weekend, than they did Super Bowl Weekend, which used to be the biggest weekend that our sport had. That is not the case anymore, but I'm just sharing with you some of these perennial events. I've yet to hear anybody request to be on the Madison Square Garden card. And I understand the rumor of Stipe and Jones, but they didn't ask to be there. It's where they got put. Why the Sphere? That's what I'm going back to. Why the Sphere? What's so special about the Sphere? And you want to know something, guys? If Dana isn't real careful, he's going to have to change his marketing to where that becomes the perennial event and the biggest event in UFC history. Now, that was supposed to be 300. Right at the time that 100 came, that was going to be the biggest event ever. Then at the time 200 came, that was going to be the biggest event. So at least in theory, 300, biggest event ever. Now we've got, guys, 5 minutes ago, Sean O'Malley is in training right now to fight at the Sphere, of which he hasn't been rumored, he hasn't been asked. Sean O'Malley, who just might be the sport's biggest star, is campaigning and lobbying to be at the Sphere where he knows he can't be the main event because they already got one. Are you hearing what I'm saying? None of those things happen. None of these urgencies, none of these requests, none of these cashing in, none of these big ones, big moments, short notice, late notice, find me a new opponent, whatever it takes, get me on the Sphere. None of those things happen had Dana not made the promise, or the statement rather, that it's a one and done. If the Sphere was a new venue we're going to, and by the way, it would make sense because it's 4 miles up the road from our headquarters. We're going to play the Sphere all the time. In fact, I already got $16 million in equipment. I could go to the Sphere anytime I wanted. It's a production nightmare, but once I get it down one time, I just plug the things into the same, right? You only got to figure it out one time. No matter how complicated production looks, if you get it right the first time, you take that equipment, you look where the cord is, and you plug it into the same spot next time, right? Not for nothing, but the first one's the hard one. And he was doing it for a reason. He's never talked like that. He's never had a venue. He's never made it clear this is a one-time thing, ever. Give me an example. Go ahead. You can't do it. There's been places that he's only played one time. I'm in one of them. Portland, Oregon. We've got one pay-per-view ever. Why didn't he say when I go to Portland, I'm only going to go one time? Why did he say that about any other venue ever? But now you're starting to see it. It was right in front of us. I missed it. If Dana doesn't make calls, he doesn't do matchmaking, he doesn't do what he has to do as a fight promoter to get fights together. If he does not do that, if he just stands back and lets the boys and girls figure it out on their own and says yes, I believe he could have the biggest fight card he's ever had. I believe on accident he is going to not only surpass, I think he's going to crush 300 on accident. This is where he's got to make a decision. Do I say yes to my biggest star, Sean O'Malley? How do I say yes to anyone else and I don't say yes to my biggest star? If he's going to bring Diaz back, I don't know if he's going to, but I'm sharing with you. He knows. He knows whether he's going to give that opportunity or not. If he's going to bring Diaz back, why wouldn't you bring him back here? And if you bring him back here, where are you going to put him? These guys are going to jerk the curtain. So imagine what I'm saying. If you had Michael Chandler and Nate Diaz, or if you had Dustin Poirier and Nate Diaz jerking the curtain of your pay-per-view, have I proven my point that you now have the greatest card ever assembled? It truly is one of these incredible things. And I'm not convinced that we're here because it's this great big round building or because it has a level of production that costs another $16 million just to be able to plug into the ports. I don't believe any of those things. I believe the Sphere is working for the same reasons the All-Star game works. You can get all the players to say yes. Why? Because it's such a rare opportunity. I believe it works. You can't get 5 of the top basketball players to go put on matching uniforms and go somewhere for free. But that's exactly what they're going to do for the Olympic Games in 1 month. They're going to put on matching uniforms, pretend that they're teammates, of which they aren't. And they're going to play for absolutely nothing. And they're going to play a lot. They're going to play 5, 6, and 7 games on the house. None of them would do a single one. Why? Well, the Olympics, it's only once every 4 years. It makes perfect sense, right? Like, I'm not stating something that you guys don't understand. The best marketing that can ever be done, or the best at least that I've witnessed, is to have something that's really cool that the elitists can have. Like, just to qualify to be able to do it. To buy a Ferrari, for example. Did you guys think that, by the way? You might not know this. You might think that you could go into a Ferrari life. If you got the money, if I win the lottery, I'm going to go buy a Ferrari. Well, no, you're not. Not unless you're approved. And to get approved means you have to have a previous Ferrari, or you got to go on a wait list, and it's a very difficult thing to do. But I'm speaking to the marketing of Ferrari, a fancy credit card. You take something really cool that only elitists can have, and then you tell the elitist no. I've never seen anything more effective in marketing. And that's precisely what we have here with the Sphere, because the genius knew that, got in front of it, and proclaimed only doing it once. Michael Chandler. Michael Chandler has done it again. Old Chael is keeping the lights on because of old Michael Chandler. Now, can I tell you this before I get to Chandler? Can I personalize? Can I throw myself in here? I never had a time in my career where I got more street cred. And I could feel it. I could feel people's excitement. To see me or say hello or get an autograph, that sounded gross, didn't it? I'm sorry, but I could feel it. I could actually feel the energy and the excitement around me, and I never got a bigger bounce. I had a week. John Jones refused to fight me, and Rampage Jackson did an interview where he said he was not going to fight me. And Rampage went even further. He basically conceded victory. He said, well, he's just take me down and hold me there, win a decision. He like gave me all the things that you get, the victory over him without ever having to throw a punch. I never thrown a punch at either one of them. And it was just an incredible thing. Like as it was happening, I go, my, wow, I didn't know you could do that in this sport. I didn't know your stock could go up in fighting without fighting, but it did that week. And you want to know why I tell you that? So the inside scoop on Michael Chandler, like if you go talk to Chandler on the side about Conor McGregor, and this dates back way over a year. Hey, what is it you have to gain? How are you getting in this spot? And it's not what all of you think. There is not some new lucrative contract that comes exclusively for McGregor. That is how the story is told. And everybody is happy to continue telling the story that way because they feel that it elevates them. I'm just here to share with you guys, it's not true. Your contract is whatever your contract, whoever the next guy is. And it doesn't change if it's Conor. But if you talk to Michael Chandler, hey, what's this about? Why are you waiting? Why did this fight become so important to you and the one you couldn't let go of? And the answer was very simple. Michael Chandler was playing a long game, and he would explain this to you very calmly. Conor McGregor has the fans. So in Michael Chandler's mind, if he could defeat Conor McGregor, he could leave with a larger percentage of those fans than anybody else that he might be able to get matched up with. And I'm just here to let you know and to let Mike know he's a big fan of the program. He won. He got it. Michael Chandler is getting the same bounce from having McGregor back down from him. And there's no way around it. Like, you might like the discolored pinky toe excuse and you might not. You might believe it, or you might be like me, where you say, that is ridiculous. But either way, there was an agreement to fight on a certain night, and there was one guy that said, I am not tough enough to walk out there and even try. I'm conceding to you on that night under those rules that we predetermined to agree upon, I cannot beat you. In fact, I can't even follow the golden rule, which is to protect myself at all times. I'm out. Now, we have somebody do that every weekend, right? Like you'll play a season of basketball games and that will never happen ever, not one single time. We can't go from Saturday to Saturday. I have never been in a faker tough guy business than this one, but I digress because it's not actually my point. My point is Chandler got it. And maybe he did have to sit, and maybe he did have to wait. And maybe it was long and it was drawn out and his wife wasn't as thrilled about the checks that were coming in the door. But he still got it. Chandler is a top five draw in our sport. And if you challenge that, please lay out five that you believe you and the average fan would like to see more than Michael Chandler. Go ahead, I'll wait. And I don't know that that was true prior to Chandler going down this road with Connor, doing the Ultimate Fighter, being in front of you guys on the worldwide leader of ESPN every single week for the duration of that program, all of the headlines that come with it, even what was to be taken away and turned into what was not, created headlines. Michael Chandler now, he's now pissed off Dustin Poirier. And did you see this? I'm talking about Poirier's interview with Ariel. Like, not he bothered him or he got a response from Poirier. I would have said he bothered him or I would have said he got a response from Poirier. He has pissed him off. There was a tone that Dustin Poirier was taking while discussing Chandler with Ariel that was far more turned up than anything he had against St. Denis, for example. Anything he had in his prior fight against Justin Gaethje, and that was for a title. Anything that he had in his previous fight with Islam. And it all came because Michael Chandler told Poirier to retire. Okay. Okay. So, Michael Chandler fought Dustin Poirier and he lost. Michael Chandler has not fought since. And that's debated in my mind. I feel like Poirier was his last fight, but then part of my mind says, no, when he defeated Ferguson was, and I'm only sharing that, like, you don't have to correct me. It was still that same time frame, and it was still a meaningful amount of time ago. And moreover, Chandler hasn't done much since, and Poirier has done a lot since, right? Including two title fights, three matches in total. So at least in theory, Poirier would have gotten better by having two title fights, three matches in total, then Chandler having done nothing, and Chandler lost the first time. So who is Chandler to tell Poirier to retire? Who cares, man? Who cares who he is? It's a brilliant thing to say. It's a brilliant thing to say. And it worked, right? It's the truth that hurts. You're not going to hurt a guy you have to tell lies about him. It's one of these weird situations where I could not support it more. And I also don't think that Michael Chandler, pre this run with Conor McGregor, could have said anything to Dustin Poirier that would have got Dustin Poirier going. I mean, he signed a contract to fight him and Dustin Poirier didn't get worked up. He was in the cage fighting Dustin Poirier and Dustin Poirier didn't get upset. But now you have Chandler, who has not competed, telling Dustin Poirier, who has, to just retire. Oh my goodness. And it's, guys, I mean, I must tell you, I never had success, and I was always punching forward, right? I'm a guy that's not even in the UFC. I'm going to bring down Anderson Silva. I'm going to beat up all these guys and do all these things. Always trying to go forward, just trying to get up the ladder. It was very hard to get up the ladder if these guys that you're calling for dismiss you. In fact, you can just look like a fool doing an interview if you can't find a way to get yourself intertwined with some of these guys. And it was Scott Hall, rest his soul. Scott Hall, who I've tried to pay homage to over the years for the entertainment that he gave me. But he told a story, and he was doing a house show. And a house show is a wrestling term that means to see the show, you need to be in the house. There's no cameras. You must come to the event. And the wrestlers would travel up and down the interstate. And whether they came through Seattle and hit Portland and went to Salem before they hit Sacramento, they just head right up the interstate. So Scott Hall goes out and he does a match and he loses. Gets pinned. 1, 2, 3. In fact, he went to another town and he got pinned by the same guy. And he did another town working the same program. Got pinned by the guy 3 straight times before he gets back to television. He goes on television and he says, I know I can beat this guy. I just pinned him last night in St. Paul. Well, that's not true. He got pinned. He got pinned in St. Paul. Why did he just tell the audience that he won the match? So Kevin Nash asked him that on the way to the back. He said, hey, why did you claim that you won? You got pinned. And Scott Hall said, I'm a heel. Heels lie. And I will just tell you, in my own career, when I could not get some of those guys to pay me attention, I couldn't get a response from Nogueira, either one of the Nogueiras. But as soon as I said that they fed a bus a carrot because they thought it was a horse, my name was coming out of their mouth. And I'm just sharing for you. There was something about that sets guys off. There is Michael Chandler telling Dustin Poirier, you can't get on the docket with me, young man. Just why don't you just retire? When he lost to, people forget, we got new fans here. I got new fans here right now. YouTube sends me how many new subscribers I have a month, and they send that to me every month. Well, I have a brand new audience. And I don't know if that audience came from somewhere else or if they just joined the sport. I don't know. But a lot of them are brand new to the sport. My point being, as much as many of you are going to say, I remember that fight. I remember when Poirier took his back and choked him out. I remember that entire thing. Yeah, okay, you do. But a lot of other people don't. They got drunk and watched the fight. They weren't paying attention to those guys. They weren't big enough fans in the sport. They weren't fans at all. They didn't watch. They didn't even know that it happened. That represents tens of thousands of people who Michael Chandler just led to believe that he is in another category. He is higher up and he does not have time for Dustin Poirier. I think you can see the brilliance in that. I think you can see the cleverness in that. And I think you can see how that's going to piss Dustin off. The Olympics are well underway, and I can't help but think the journey it must take to become an Olympian. It's never done alone, guys. These athletes have lifelong coaches, training partners, and the best support system in the world. And if you're looking for that same championship-level e-commerce store, you need Shopify in your corner. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the we just hit $1 million stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're auctioning autographed apparel or selling custom t-shirts, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you are selling, Shopify has got your back. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading e-commerce platforms, and sell more with less effort. Thanks to Shopify's magic, your AI-powered all-star. No matter how big you grow, you don't have to feel overwhelmed by the demand. Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level with ease. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's extensive help resources are there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/chale. That's all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/chale right now to grow your business no matter what stage you are in. Shopify.com/chale.
Life can always use more Cedar Point. And right now, you can get more Cedar Point for less with the Fun Day Bundle for just $74.99. Each bundle gets you admission, parking, and all-day dining for one low price. That means more coasters like Steel Vengeance and more nostalgic fun in the boardwalk area. But you better hurry because this bundle won't last. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
Sports Science. I did a show called Sports Science. Have you guys seen that? I don't know if it's still on, but it was fun. You take like something that you had in theory, even a common belief that's out there, then this guy would come out and he would actually test it from a more scientific standpoint and document for what would happen. So the part that I was on, I got Houston Alexander. Just for example, myself, we got Krzysztof Szyszynski against a Cincinnati Bengals running back. He's going to run the ball. We're other big athletes, but we're not football players, and we're just going to see if we can strip the ball from him. Real simple, this is what we're going to do. Now, the relevance of that, so we do it at a school because we need access to a football field. So now I am on the campus of a school. This is in California. While on the campus of the school in California, kids are coming out. They're pretty excited, man. We got a Cincinnati Bengals. There's a few fighters there. And these were younger kids. These were like middle school kids. And I end up in conversation with them, and they are making it very, they are very big Kimbo Slice fans. But I'm talking right with them, man. I'm a Kimbo fan too, and he's kind of new, and there's something out called Elite XC. And Kimbo was the main eventer, and he's doing great things. But this was very much from an entertainment standpoint, of which I thought I was on the same page with the kids, or the kids were on the same page with me. But as they start talking, that isn't the situation. They're not fans of Kimbo. They believe that Kimbo is the greatest fighter in the world. And their illustration for that was that he had won his last three fights. He won them all by knockout. In fact, he knocked out a guy last Saturday. They're telling me this. And, you know, I'm listening. I'm not looking to put Kimbo down, but I'm a little caught off guard. And I'm listening. Well, you know, I don't know if he's the top fighter in the world, but he's certainly doing a good job over there. And I'm trying to have more of a sophisticated conversation, but it was a big learning moment for me, which is why I'm telling you guys about it. Like, I have never forgot the psychology, and this was just kids. And somewhere as I'm going, well, you know, he's pretty good. Somewhere as I'm doing that, one of the kids calls me on it. So what do you think? You're better than Kimbo? And he said, I follow your career. You lost two fights ago. I'm looking at him going, yeah, but that was a world title fight. Kimbo's fighting guys that aren't, you know, it's one of these things, but the kids let me know that I'm wrong. That I had lost a couple fights. They even saw it, and he has won his last five by knockout, including one on Saturday. I am just clearly out of my mind. So, oh, wow. That's interesting. Like, at some point on my journey as a fan, I also had that mindset. Once I learned more and I was around it more, then I adopted more of a sophisticated mindset like I have now, which is, you know, who you're fighting and how was the competition? What was the performance like? Not just the outcome, but this was a major eye-opener for me. And what I believe to be true, like, nobody in my circle, and I talk fighting every day with somebody, nobody within my circle had this mindset. Now, these guys aren't fighters at all. They don't aspire to be. They don't go to the gym. Their pops didn't used to train. Nothing like that. They were just middle schoolers, but they were fans. And Elite XC was on CBS, and they had seen it. And Kimbo was the guy for obvious reasons. One, he was biggest. Heavyweight, he's main event. He won in the main event fight. Obviously, he could beat everybody else. Okay. So, now the reason I bring that to you, is it to go back on Kimbo? This was a very effective moment for me. It was a very effective moment for me to understand that social media, or what I might see on social media, that I would then believe was the larger consensus of the audience, is really just confined to who happened to send the tweet in conjunction with at what point did I pick up the phone and read a couple of tweets. Like, if there was a coincidence and a couple of guys had an opinion and it was to go up instead of down, and I happen to look at it and I get those couple of opinions, I put it down and I don't get any other opinions, you can see where I'm influenced, and I'm also going to think that that's a voice for the masses. There was a Saturday Night Live when I was growing up with Stuart Small. He'd look in the mirror and he'd say, I'm good enough, I'm smart enough, and doggone it, people like me. It was called a daily affirmation, but people would tease him. They would make fun of it. Well, the problem with making fun of it, it's real. It's very real. So if you need to let certain voices in, or you need to keep setting certain voices out, there's a number of world champions, Olympic champions, where they won't talk to the outside world, and then they will write notes to themselves. Dave Schultz was very, very well known for this. He would write his notes, his goals, but they wouldn't say what he wanted to do. It would, from a perspective that he'd already done it, I am the Olympic champion. before the Olympics had even come up, right? He's a little boy. I am the Olympic champion. And he would put that on his mirror, the mirror that he brushed his teeth in every day, so he was forced to see it. But think about that. Like, that makes good sense. You probably heard some level of that, whether you've done it or not, but you probably heard some level of it. But just apply that to the other side, that if you're letting stuff in that aren't the notes that you posted for yourself, you're now going to be susceptible to whatever it is you hear. And where am I going with this? Joe Pfeiffer. Okay. Now, here's what you might not know about Joe Pfeiffer. You probably don't know how to spell or pronounce Pfeiffer. And the other side that you might not know is he is a straight up badass. Joe Pfeiffer is not a mixed martial artist. He's skilled in the martial arts. That dude is a rough guy. Like, there was a number of crafts that he could have gone into. And if he was out playing basketball, man, I don't like playing with that guy. That guy's too rough. I played with him last week and I cut an elbow to the face. Like, he's one of these guys. He's a rough guy. And if you gave him the elbow back, it wouldn't bother him at all, right? Like, you know guys like that, they just prefer contact? Like, Joe likely had a brother in the house, and it was likely an older brother or two. I don't know. I don't know his family background, but that's how he acts. Like, he's a rough guy. And he's very good at fighting, but apparently he had lost. I think it was his very last fight. Now, he fought at UFC 302, okay? He just fought this last weekend. And he won, and it was an undercard, and it was a stoppage. And he called out Paul Craig, which is an excellent fight. I don't know if he can get that fight. Paul Craig is a little bit more of a known commodity, but Paul Craig is not going to just let somebody call him out either. He might get that fight, which would be a big deal. Okay? If Joe Pfeiffer was coming off a loss, and I think he was, he gets on the card, he gets a win, he gets it by stoppage to get back on track, he cuts an interview with Joe Rogan, by the way, he calls out Paul Craig, and he gets that fight, like, this is a grand slam. Everything is going great. And I find out about Joe, I follow the sports, so I know about him, but I'm finding out about him and some of his training, and a little more that went into the fight that did not go his way, when I'm talking with Ian Parker. And Ian predicted him to win, and Ian told all his guys, go bet on this guy. There is money here. He's not only going to win, Joe's going to win by knockout. It was really interesting. So I'm kind of, Pfeiffer's a little bit more on my tongue than he likely knows. He was undercard. He came out, though. He was talking about, damned if you do, damned if you don't. You know, here he is trying to get back on track. Here he is taking this risk. He goes out, he gets the outcome that he wants, and everybody's telling him that he got fraud checked. And he goes on with this interview, and he uses that term. He got fraud checked. He was fraud checked. He can't win. Everybody's down on him. Fraud checked. It was like this never happened. You know, swimming against the currents type thing. And use the term fraud check 3 to 4 to 5 times in this interview. You wonder why I tell you that? I've never heard the term. It was like when Masvidal told me that I was a crotch sniffer. I have never heard the term. But me not hearing the term and a guy using the term 5 times is very relevant. You can't come out and say everybody is saying and then use an expression that the coolest guy in the room with 20 times the followers you got has never heard. Like, you see where the two aren't possible? You can't believe everybody is saying when a dude with 20 times your follow has never even heard the term. Apparently, it's not everybody. Apparently, it's somebody who thinks they enveloped and developed a new phrase and vernacular for the industry. I mean, it's just a very small point. One thing Joe cannot do is get himself tied to that. It's not real. None of it's real. And it's very easy to say from the outside. It's very hard when you're living in that moment. See, man, I'm sweating every day for this. No, you're not. No, you're not. All discipline is, just so you people understand, is remembering what you want. That's it. Because you will constantly forget what it is you want. You will constantly forget your goals, and you will constantly get distracted and go and do something else. And the reason I say that, there was no point when Joe Pfeiffer started, when he was a little boy with a glimmer in his eye, watching someone on TV and thinking, I can do that. I can make my mom proud. There was no part of him that thought, I'm going to pick up my phone on a rate and I'm going to go to a social media app and it's going to say good things about me. That was never the goal. He never went to practice and learned to jab or a cross so that he got a nice tweet. He never got into professional sports hoping to earn a living so that he got nice tweets. It was never part of it. He forgot what he wanted. And that's why I tell you it's not real. There's two things in this business that are real aside from the bumps and bruises. The money and the miles. That's it. There is a portion of your life that will be gone, and you will be traveling, and you won't be somewhere. You'll be having dinners alone, and you'll be in hotels, and you're up to make the next flight because you got to get to another town. And you're hoping you know somebody that will hold mitts for you so you can get a workout in before you go to bed, before you get in on a plane and make another town. And somewhere along the way, you're hoping to get a check. Two things that are real: money, miles. Tweets are not one of them. And by the way, there is not everybody telling this to Joe. It might feel like everybody, but it wouldn't be real anyway. If that never changes, and whoever this everybody, whoever these three people are, they keep weighing in on his. If they never change, if they just keep doing that, it won't matter, because that's not real anyway. That's not when he started in this sport and made a promise to himself and a deal with his coaches and tried to make his mother proud. There was no part of it that had to do with a tweet that was for you or against you. Money and the miles. If it's anything that is not one of those two, it's not real. It doesn't matter. But you will feel like it is, and you will feel like you were boxed in. And I want to grab Joe because I want to help him. I want to help. I think Ian might have a relationship with him. I don't know. The way Ian spoke about him, though, man, he really believed in him. And he made me a believer in him. I'm watching. I thought that Joe looked great. I don't like reading an interview where he's hurting. I don't like that somebody hurt his feelings. I don't like that he wasn't proud of himself and would grab his phone to see what strangers said to make himself feel even better, and then brought him down. I don't like that. But it is a concern for me if you start to think that those things are real. We're the fighters. We're the ones in the group. We're the ones that come and tell the kids and the junior high kids who are considering suicide, drugs, alcohol, running away, very serious stuff because they're getting bullied on social media. We're the ones that come in and tell them, don't let that bother you. Don't let that affect you. Those people would never walk up and say it to me, so they gotta say it here because they're a bunch of cowards. We're the ones that go and do that. So we can't be the ones that go, oh, everybody's telling me that if I fraud checked or something. Please, trust me. If it's not a vernacular that I use, it's not a cool vernacular. Just not for nothing. Everybody. I would never want to be rude to Joe. That's the opposite of my piece right now. But the everybody, you don't even get to pretend. You don't even get to think for a moment it's everybody if you're an undercard fighter. I'm not trying to be a dick. But the category of everybody or nobody, that's the category, right? If you ain't got a big fan base that's pulling you up to the televised card of the two buckets of everybody, nobody, you got to go with nobody. Man, nobody's paying attention to this fight. I fought 51 men, and you want to know why I say that? Because it sounds cool. I don't know how many guys I fought. How would I know that? I go to Sure Dog is probably what I would have to do, but Sure Dog's not right. I know they're not right because I fought Ben Haley and Trevor Prangley in 1997, and they didn't list the matches. I'm not turning on Sure Dog, by the way. Like, that's a really great source. I'm just sharing with you. How would I even know? How would I possibly know? And it's my career. I'm into the semifinals of a heavyweight world title tournament. I do not know how many heavyweights I fought. I'm not trying to be cute right now. I fought for the light heavyweight world championship. I don't know how many light heavyweights I fought. I do not know. I fought for two world championships at 185 pounds. I don't know how many guys I had to go to be a contender. I can find it. I can go look it up. What I'm sharing for you is, if I don't know my own career, for you to make believe that everybody knows yours, like I'll see guys do interviews, and they're painfully boring. They go, well, obviously, you know, I don't want the same kind of third round as I had two fights ago over there at the Honda Center against John Jacob Jingleheimer Schmidt. And everybody's going, third round, two fights ago, Honda Center, you and so-and-so. I don't even know that fight happened. What do you mean, obviously? Obviously, you think we know the round? We don't even know who you fought. Once we do know who you fought, we don't care at all. You either did something tonight that keeps you with the company. That's all that matters. Do you have a job to come to tomorrow? It's no different than me as the reporter asking you a question. One thing we care about. One thing we'll ever give you a hard time, give you a pass, lift you, or kick you for. Do you have a job to go to tomorrow? You could have lost tonight. You could have lost in embarrassing fashion. Are they releasing you or not? If they're not releasing you, we're all good. We don't even got to talk about yesterday. One's got none to do with the other. The biggest star in the sport is Conor McGregor, did not win his last fight. His opponent for Red Panty Night, which was the biggest box office ever, even if it got canceled, was Michael Chandler, who has something in common with Conor McGregor, which he didn't win his last fight. All the rest of that stuff is in your head. It's not real. If it's not the money or the miles, stop thinking about it. Confidence. What good is confidence? I don't know if there's anybody that gives that word a harder time than old Chael. But it's not as though I discount it completely. Like, there's something to be said for it, right? It was the old George Costanza. Do you guys remember this? They're sitting in the coffee shop. Jerry has to go take a lie detector test. They're having a whole conversation about it. And just before Jerry leaves, George tells him, hey, Jerry, just remember, it's not a lie if you believe it. Okay. But there's so much truth to that statement. Even though they did that in a comedy and they did that as a joke, if you truly believe something, but guys, I don't know that I'm speaking about confidence. Like, I'll hear coaches, are you gonna have confidence? I'll hear that word. And it's like, great to write a chapter in a book you're gonna sell on Amazon for $9.99. But I don't know where in life it's true. And I can only personalize. The more confidence I had, the less urgency I had. Fear creates an urgency, which creates a speed and a quickness. I mean, it depends what you're doing. But in this sport, those things can be very helpful, and confidence can slow you down. Not to mention mislead you. I mean, but it's not to fully be discounted. There is something there, but it hedges closer on delusion than it does confidence. And while confidence is a positive word and delusion is a negative word, delusion is the one that you actually want. Okay. I use all of this because when I watched Rikus Duplessis, I don't know that he's a different fighter now than he was when he burst on the scene. Oh, and by the way, bursting on the scene can be identified as prior to the year-end pay-per-view of 2022. Prior to that, he was stuck on a card, undercard, and that same card had Bo Nickel on the main card. And Bo would have been making his UFC debut, and Dricus had already fought there a number of times. Now, Dricus starts speaking up, and I could just barely hear him. I could barely hear him because when I went to his Twitter account, he had like 800 followers. And guys, by the way, I'm not exaggerating. It might have been less. For sure. Bet my house, it was in the hundreds. He could have had 200. It was in the hundreds. That's what I'm promising. It was under 1,000, quite literally. So, something happens to Bo. That fight gets pulled. Dricus have been speaking up. UFC has always done their best to give guys what it is they ask for. So guys don't understand that. They don't hear that. In fact, they think they're better to be in the corner and be quiet. But the UFC has always tried to give you what you ask for. So if we got to move somebody from the undercard to the main card, we only have one guy that's asking for it, right? I mean, it's a lot like giving Pierre the main event at 300. That we're going to do a title fight. We only have one champion that has asked for the spot. All right. I digress, but this is where Dricus bust onto the scene. And he ends up, wasn't he fighting Darren Till that night? Wasn't that who he had? And he looked pretty good. Couldn't go much further than that. He looked pretty good. There was moments of that fight, and if I remember, there was even a round of that fight that Till won. It was a pretty close fight. Came down to the third round. This is on my memory, but I think I'm right on this. And then it turns out that Till was like on one leg out there. He looked pretty good. That's where it ends. Might want to watch himself as he's calling out champion wrestlers, but he looked pretty good. And then the next time we see DDP was only because he had spoken up. Now he's opposite Robert Whittaker in what could be a title fight. And he's got a great story with Adesanya. Because the black-white still makes people highly uncomfortable. But it was like any other train where they couldn't look away. They were still watching no matter how uncomfortable they were. But he's a 3-1 dog. He's not getting over on Robert Whittaker. And I think that we all understood that. But he did. not only did he get over on him, he won every round that he was out there. Not only did he win every round, he won the striking and he won the wrestling. I mean, he won the entire fight. Fair enough. Now, set that aside because he doesn't do any more matches. The next time we see Israel Adesanya, it's against Sean Strickland, and it was the worst we've seen Izzy look. Now, you got a lot of questions for that. Was that a bad matchup? Like Izzy looked the worst we've seen him look because Sean made him look that way. But you don't know. You don't fully know. Sometimes you got to see something more than once, and it's one of those situations. And when that fight gets done, as much as Sean had bust on the scene, you still are kind of going, hey, where's Izzy? And Dana himself is going, I'm going to remake that match. I don't care that Izzy didn't win a single round. I'm going to put Izzy against Sean because I also, just like Chael saying, don't believe that was Izzy. And then we get hit with the information that Izzy had some distractions prior to the fight. Okay, well, we're left with that. There begins to a rumor. Chimaev versus Strickland gets announced and gets talked about, right? But never gets signed. So then a rumor comes in that it's actually going to be Izzy opposite Strickland. Then the rumor comes in it's going to be DDP versus Strickland, but Izzy's going to be in the front row. And why? Because Izzy is going to challenge the winner of Strickland versus DDP in the main event of UFC 300. Now, I can tell you for sure that was in fact the plan. Did that plan last an hour or did it last a week? That I don't know. But it was in fact the plan to get Izzy to Canada to watch an American fight a South American. Just accept it. This is the way it went. In a fight that nobody asked for. That's only happening because the guy in Bahrain, by way of Chechnya, right, broke his hand and couldn't. Like, it was one of these things where you throw it up in the air, but Sean's supposed to come out on top. Get Sean and Izzy in the rematch, which is the one Dana wanted to see. Doesn't happen. So you are left to wonder, where's Izzy at? How's the training going? Defeating those distractions, did he succeed? And you have Izzy versus DDP. The hottest fight and the hottest feud our industry has ever seen. It only lasted 10 days. Regardless of what your memories tell you, DDP and Izzy, as hot as that was, lasted for 10 days. And it should have lasted for more like 10 minutes. If they would have listened to me, they would have. I told them, to the point that I had to get in an argument with Red Pill over this thing. I told them the moment that DDP did his interview after beating Whitaker, he's still sweaty, he hasn't even put his t-shirt on. I told you, we've lost him. He's not doing the fight. And sure enough, we lost him and he didn't do the fight. So now that we've waited and now that we're here, you've got this feud, and whether both guys have been told, don't talk about it, or the media just got uncomfortable, that I really couldn't tell you. But you have the world's hottest feud, which is the whole reason it's happening. And you got two guys that are being radio silent, but we still are left with a question, who's going to win? And when they were matched up the first time, it was a 3-1 favorite for Izzy. I haven't checked with DraftKings today. I haven't checked to see these odds. But I will predict for you that line is going to be very difficult for you guys to bet. Even if you think Izzy's better, I do believe in August of last year, you think Izzy probably would have stopped him. I don't think that you think he's going to stop him this time. I don't think that you think it's going to be a steamrolling this time. I think that you understand it's going to be a back and forth affair. I think that you understand that there's been a confidence that was gained by DDP, and DDP didn't have it the first time. I know it infuriates him when I say this, but I'm the one telling the story accurately. He didn't have the confidence to fight Izzy the first time, which is why he backed down in the interview right after he fought Whitaker. But I do believe he has the confidence now. I do believe he sincerely, I'm talking DDP, wanted more time to prepare for Izzy. Well, he's got it now. So who would you see the advantage for? Do you still see it 3-1, Izzy? Is this still a walk in the park? They've got a common opponent. They have two common opponents, in fact. Sean Strickland and Robert Whitaker. But they got a difference. Izzy beat one, Izzy lost one. Duplessis beat one, then he beat the other one. So as you see it, who is the favorite in that fight? over the weekend. What happened there, by the way? I did not see it. But let me back up and let me just give you this from my perspective, okay? Darren Till is scheduled to fight Chavez Jr. on the Jake Paul Mike Tyson Netflix undercard. All right. Now, I got to tell you, I'm kind of into that. I wish they'd shorten it up. I wish they'd go 5 or 6 rounds. I can't beg them enough. Like if you sit down and you try to beg people that are running boxing, like, hey, I beg you to do this because I'm a supporter, but I implore you to understand that I'm right. And you can't get a person in boxing to understand the worst part of a boxing event is the boxing. But the rest of the event is pretty good. Like, they don't even get that concept. But there's a lot of things like that. The worst thing of a pro wrestling event, one of the biggest money makers in all of entertainment. But the worst part is the pro wrestling. Like, if you could just shorten those matches and elongate everything else, from the walkouts to the music to the pop to the crowd engagement. So I tell you that because the idea of Darren Till and Chavez, I'm into it. But my guess is when we sit down to watch, we got to watch 10 rounds of it or something just painfully boring like this. Now, I digress. I just wanted to offer for you that I support that match. Like, there's something there with Chavez Jr. He's just weird enough, and he's taken his career just unseriously enough. Like he's gone off the beaten path of his father just enough that it's interesting. It's not something where you sit down and put him down or tease him, or you kind of watch and go, I don't know what's going to happen here. You know, I got this lifelong boxer. I don't know if Darren Till's stung competitive boxing, but I still think Till can beat him because you start to fill in the blank. Like, it just works for me. All right. So Till comes off of that card. And when he comes off of that card, it's to fight on Saturday. The fight on Saturday was Diaz versus Masvidal. So I don't know who Till's going to fight over there, but I knew that they were looking for a guy. I knew they'd done some sniffing around. My phone had rang. Apparently, that's not accurate. Apparently, there was another event on Saturday. So Till, who pulled off of his committed fight with Chavez Jr., and there could be more, that fight fell through, something like that. The way it was presented, though, is that it was Till's idea. He pulled off. Oh, and by the way, he gets another fight. He goes up and does the fight. I don't even know there is another show. So when I find this out, I see a picture of Darren Till and he looks very happy. Like, it's just a still photo. It's a still photo. His shirt is off. There's not much of a sweat. He's got gloves on and he looks very happy. Now, right there, I'm interested because I know the secret. I know that Darren Till hates to fight. So trying to figure out what happened. Go, man, I watched the Diaz-Masvidal card. It was awful. I mean, everybody did their part. It was just awful. They could have had one match prior to the main event. They could have had no matches prior to the main event. They were all painful. With an exception to Chris Avila. So then I find out there's something in Middle East. There's some opponent. And there was something with their match where there was only one punch thrown. Now, I couldn't see it and I never saw it. I saw the interviews after it. I saw people discussing it. It was something along the lines of they come together to fight. There's one punch thrown by Till. It goes into what the opponent perceives to be the back of the head. The fight appeared to be headed to either disqualification or more likely no contest when the opponent rushes Till and gets himself disqualified. Now, again, I didn't see it. I'm only sharing with you the perspective that I have, which is Till's going to fight Chavez Jr. out of nowhere. Till's off the card. He's on another card that I don't even know exists against an opponent who only had one name. It wasn't like a two-named opponent or a three-name where you slip the nickname in there. He had one name, which you do when you think you're a cool guy, but I can't produce the name for you. I mean, I'm just suggesting for you. This is some dork. He goes over to fight some dork, and then it turns out to not be a fight. I didn't see it. But there is nothing about what I read or what I did observe that made me think that that was above board. It's a very strange situation. And I know that Darren Till hates to fight. I know if he had Chavez Jr. coming up and he's got a box and, man, there's something cool. There's going to be Mike Tyson. Going to throw a few dollars at it. Do this thing on Netflix. The bad news, though, is I got to go box. Fill in the blank. So when he came off of it, I'm immediately thinking, no. Now, he didn't trade a fight for a fight. The problem is he hates to fight. So then to see that it was turns into a wrestling situation, right? What is my point of talking to you? I guess it's to ask you if I'm right. And these things always upset Till. Like, Till, I don't feel ever listens to the pieces that I make about him. Feels like he had, hey, Chael Sonnen said that you hate to fight. And then he's got to get his feathers up. It's like, dude, please don't do that. Please don't. You had a contract with the UFC that you gave back. You got out of the USADA pool. You talked about boxing, but you never actually did it. You had opportunities all over the place, including against Mike Perry for $1 million, and you didn't even sit down at the table to negotiate. Like, I'm not giving you a hard time. I'm sharing that if you got a guy like Till, it's got a big fan base. This is a former title contender. And by the way, he's pretty young. When Till burst on the scene and stopped a guy named Cowboy Cerrone in the first round, bursted on the scene and stopped him. He was 25 years old. Just to remind you, when Dana fast-tracked him and put him in there for a world championship, he hadn't turned 26 yet. That wasn't that long ago. Till's going 33, 34 years old. I'm sharing from a standpoint, if you're going to take some time off to get better, whatever that might be, heal my body, lift, change weight classes, whatever it might be that you sell yourself on, there's nothing good that happens from taking yourself away. It's a sell job. You sell yourself on the idea of I'm going to work on myself and I'm going to get better. You don't, but I was just sharing, if you're in Till's place, the thing you got to work on, as far as it goes with fighting, is the fact that you hate fighting. That's the thing. The anxiety and all the things that come around it, that's the part you need to work on, not the jab or the cross. And when I see Till respond to this thing, it's like he's upset or that I'm calling him out. I'm doing no such thing. None at all. Supporter, like watching him, was planning to watch the Chavez fight because I like him. Watched Diaz Masvidal excited that Till was going to come through the curtain at some point, and he didn't. I'm just telling you, when I saw this thing and it turns into a one punch pro wrestling match where jerk off with one name who's about to get a no contest, like whatever his little scam was, because he hates fighting just as much as Till, whatever that scam was about to work. And he was so undisciplined that he had to charge him to create a disqualification. I didn't see it, guys. I did not see it. I'm telling you, when I read it on Jump Street that Till had pulled off the Chavez fight, I knew he wasn't fighting. That's all I'm sharing with you. And then it turns out he wasn't fighting. And then I see this one interview that I tell you that reference, and it's a still shot, and I see the absolute relief on his face because the fight's over and the dude hates fighting. There is nothing wrong with that. And I know other guys like this. Like, you don't have to be in this sport, in this little community where you think this is your life. And if you don't do this, what else do you do? I don't know what else you're going to do. But being in the sport to the point that you go out and throw one punch against a jobber in a work, which is only going to piss people off. I mean, not for nothing. That is not fighting. So whatever it is that you're protecting and you're clinging to, because you can't deal with the reality. Man, I hate this. So is everybody else. There's no shame in that whatsoever. You stepped in and you did it. You did it to a pretty high level. You hate this. The interviews are fun. The social media is fun. Like, I mean, not for nothing. If you really want to test this, if you took away the social media, he's out. It's the one thing that, right? I understand this. You took the interviews out, I'd have been out. Like, there's things that guys like, and it ain't that. But to the degree that he gets an anxiety and despises this sport, I only implore, that's not doing the sport. Whatever that you were getting ready to do with Chavez, that's not the sport either. So, I'm not being a dick. You're out of the sport. There's other things you can do for entertainment. But causing yourself this absolute, I can see it. Keep doing the tweets. They're fun. They're fun. Keep doing them. Nobody will know. Stop fighting. Nate Diaz, UFC, how do we get him there? I want him there. I need your help. I can't do it without you. We can't do it without you. He can't go do it on his own, right? I mean, do you understand? There has to be an underswelling of support. And to get into a situation like that, you got to have everything done, which means an opponent. An opponent that will take the fight that's already out at the grassroots, you guys, and supported and liked. All of those things have to be done. There's times in your career where you as an athlete could get picked up. You as an athlete have done enough, have enough promise, got enough shelf life. There's other times in your career, particularly when you're a well-known commodity like Nate. Like the age of 39 isn't the one holding him back. The one holding him back is his own level of success. He's a top guy. This is a main event fighter. In no scenario of Crazyville or of any card is he less than a co-main event fighter. And these aren't Chael's opinions. He has not fought in less than a co-main. I can't remember the last time. So I'm only sharing this with you because that comes with a dollar price. See, now there's certain things that have to happen. It's not just one on the roster and we get him a fight every 3 months and we'll find some other guys with like records and move forward. It's not like that. It's a different situation. I maintain for you one of the things that cost Ronda Rousey her career was not that she was falling down in the first round over and over. It was that her contract was so big. She had to be a main event and it had to be of a pay-per-view just to justify the numbers. And main events of pay-per-views were world title fights, which means as good as Ronda was, and she was very good. She was very good. We just found out how exceptional Amanda Nunes was, for example. Like, there was a place for Ronda, and it was a meaningful place. But the way her contract works, she's got to be in this spot. Are you staying with me on this? I offer you all of that because Nate's position is going to be different, and it's got to be done. In fact, John Anik, one of the Diaz boys' biggest supporters, knows the same thing to be true that I just said and has made his suggestion, which is Dustin Poirier. Bring Nate in, get him in there with Dustin, solves every possible problem. But what is it Nate wants to do? Like, I think where Anik's head is, and he's completely correct. Like, it's a massive fight. Of course it is. But Dustin's also made it clear, I want to do one more. I want to have my goodbye. I wanted one more. And it's got to be interesting. It's got to be the right thing. And so that would be the send-off, right? But where it doesn't meet is Nate is not saying, I want one more. Nate's saying, I want to run. And Dustin is still under contract with the UFC. For them to give him one more would be a perfectly fitting thing to do should things come together. Nate doesn't currently have that contract. See, the rules are different. The rules are completely different. If Nate was still under contract, we get a Poirier, we send him off, they're going to do what they do with the numbers and the negotiated they could do, but everything's going to be fine. If you're coming in, you don't have it. Like, essentially, that's what you're asking for and that's what you're getting. I mean, that's how it's going to be viewed. Hey, you need to talk to me, and it sounds like you need a favor. And you know what? We go back far enough, you're going to be able to talk to me, and I'm open to that favor. But I don't know that I'm open to two. So you're not just asking me to come back. See, I thought you were asking me to come back. That's what I was going to have. Okay, I'll do it. You're asking me to come back and to have a new negotiation on the dollars and to get a specific fight. But you got to understand, Dana doesn't do fights. He does not make fights. I apologize. He doesn't make a fight. He doesn't book a fight. I can't remember a time. He does fights. Right? If he's going to sign you to a contract or put you on something, he's got a three-fight plan. And I think that Nate's on board with that. Listening to Nate, he's on board with that. I'm only sharing, can you get two? Can you get the favor of the meeting and the contract and to renegotiate to a different extent? By example, if Nate were to come back, and I want him to. But Nate's last fight was a sought-after in the fight capital of the world. It was completely sold out. It did great on pay-per-view, and it was a main event. Like, he's got a really good idea. I don't know what those numbers were, but he's got a really good idea, in fact, possibly exact, of what the numbers would be. And there was a statement made by Cesar Gracie, and Cesar, I would imagine, has more influence over Nate and has Nate's ear from a level of respect. But I don't know if Caesar's still the manager. I don't think that he is. So I don't know that this was an open negotiation is what I'm sharing, but Caesar just came out and said it would take millions and millions to get Nate back. Now, Nate does make millions and millions. That's all true. But Nate also said no to many more millions. He was offered a fight with Jake Paul. It wasn't about the money for Nate. He has something else he wants. I'm here to tell you what he wants now is back into the UFC. And he doesn't just want to fight. He wants fights. He's open to the multi-deal. So who would it be? What would the plan be? And if we get the favor of the meeting, get the favor of coming back in, can we also have an expectation of sitting down and renegotiating from the beginning? I don't know. If we're being real fair, I don't know. At some point, right, you would know. But at some point, we're asking for too much. That's okay. If you don't ask for too much, right, you won't ask for enough. It's one of those things. It's one of these fine lines, but I don't know if Caesar is correct, respectfully. I don't know that he is. I know Nate makes a lot of money to fight. I know Nate just sold 18,000 tickets over the weekend for a sport that he's doesn't do. I mean, I'm just sharing for you. I get the level of attraction, but I also know the incentives and the way those contracts can be built in. And one thing about a lot of fight promotions is you will be given money. In the UFC, you will earn what you make. You'll be given an opportunity to make money. But making money is very different from being given money. From a business standpoint, the one that's giving money is not sustainable and will not be around. No matter how happy you are with them tonight, there will not be a lineage and a longevity. The ones where you make money are sustainable. So it's a very different thing. And watching Nate say no to the Jake Paul and all the millions because he wanted the match with Masvidal does tell me that Nate's not unreasonable. Then he's not just about the money. He's not just out for himself. I'm offering this because I really hope they talk to him. I think they might be very pleasantly surprised with the tone and the attitude on the other end. I personally have not seen Nate this motivated. When the barn's in sight, man, that horse will take off. When there's different points in your career where you will wake up one day and you will feel different. You'll see an urgency. I think working with Nate right now would be one of the most positive experiences they've had with him. I like where Anik's at. That's one fight. Let's take Anik's idea. See where we can go from there. What else can that spawn and spur? If Diaz returns at 170 pounds. Fix was in for Fury versus Ngannou. Joe Rogan just brought this up, and I know that feels like old news, but I more want to discuss how that gets done. Like, yes, the fix was in for Fury versus Ngannou. No, the fix wasn't in for Fury versus Ngannou. Well, what's the first thing we'd have to do there, guys, if we're going to debate that? What is the very first thing we'd have to do? We'd have to define what fix means. Right, there is what lies the problem. Is boxy dirty? Yes. Is it corrupt? Is it corrupt to where the outcomes are not a straight adjudication of what happened? Yes. How can you prove that? Do you have knowledge of a prior conversation? No. Can a fix be in without prior knowledge of a conversation? Yeah, I think it can. Some people think it can't. Are you ready for me to explain? You ever hear about gangsters? I mean, you ever watching the news and they go down, and there's always a conspiracy charge. You hear that word conspiracy all the time, right? When you hear that word conspiracy, which is always on your nightly news, as it had to do with some guy they're putting in handcuffs, you've told yourself over time that's a pretty bad word. Would you agree? Hey, these guys conspired. Hey, there was a conspiracy. Will you agree that in your mind and in your heart, you think of the word conspiracy as a very bad word? Okay, great. Now, will you also admit you've never looked the word up? Will you admit for me you don't actually know what a conspiracy is? A moment ago when I said and you were weighing in on whether it was good, bad, or indifferent, but now you're faced to admit you don't even know what it means. To have a conspiracy under law, and the reason everyone you ever see goes down a conspiracy, it means you had a conversation. That's what it means. And it's extremely hard, possibly even impossible, to have a conspiracy without a conversation. So how do they do it in boxing? Well, very obviously, they do it through the media. The promoter goes to the media. He talks about what he wants next, what he plans to happen next. Well, you know, before we get there, we still got to get through Saturday night. Okay, that was the promoter, and that he just told the judges what to do. Now, the judges, though, they're an independent third party. They work for the commissions, or they work for an athletic commissioner. They work for somebody where they are not interested, and they do not hear that. And if they cannot be affected by the emotion of the promoter, it would sure seem like you can't have a conspiracy. But they can. 100% they can. And you won't have a promoter or an athletic director that'll co-sign and tell me, oh yeah, told you the truth. You, not one, not in all 50 states will one of them come forward and say, yes, the promoter can put in a request list for what judges we use in the future and we will take it into consideration. Happens in all 50 jurisdictions. They won't admit, and I don't know why. I'm not calling them out on something. I'm sharing with you how you can have a fix which would involve a conspiracy, and you can't have a conspiracy without a conversation, and you can keep these guys apart. You keep them apart because you have a mediator known as the media. So when you bring Usyk and you put him in the front row, and the promoter who's shelling out all the money, including the money for your plane ticket here and your hotel here, he's letting you know what he wants next. And he's like, oh, I don't care what happens next. You know, whatever happens, it's boxing. Straight up sport. Sport first, business second. I don't care what happens next. I mean, I got Usyk here in case Tyson wins. And I'll do that fight if, you know, and I don't have a plan if Tyson loses at all. I'll have wasted all of this. And yeah, you're right. I do have a venue and I do have tickets on sale and it's for the Unified World Championship. But we don't care if that happens or not. We care about what we're here for is to find out if Tyson can beat Francis. That's what we're here for. No. It's not, and quite frankly, nobody's wrong. There's nobody wrong in that scenario that I just laid out. The only one that's wrong is Francis. Now, people aren't going to like that argument, but it's the truth. Francis knew Usyk was coming. Francis knew the plan is for Tyson to beat me and to move into Usyk's. In fact, this whole event that I'm doing is a commercial. The entire event for Francis versus Fear, as real as that was to Francis, it was a commercial. All that was a pay-per-view commercial to sell Usyk versus Fury, which would make sense considering they're both boxers and Francis is not. Now, if Francis could stand back, and he can't, he is awful at this, but if he could stand back and look at the pieces, he would understand that's a piece and a weakness that he has. And what would he do? He would have created an opponent for himself. He would have created a storyline for himself. He would have interjected that I am the one that is going to fight Usyk. I have a contract for that. I am the bigger draw. I am the one that the people want. The board was laid out. It was no different than Usyk versus Tyson. Tyson got in a PR mess by saying that Usyk is from the Ukraine and the Ukraine is being attacked by Russia, so people are going to sympathize with Usyk. He got in trouble for that. He was 100% right. I told you guys before that fight, if you believe it's going to go to the distance, make sure you're considering a bet on Usyk. They're not going to go against a guy whose country is attacked, who publicly came out and said he fought and defended for the country, even though he didn't. By the way, that was just marketing, but it worked on you. So when you're looking at the board and you think that the fix is going to be in just a little bit, why do you believe the fix is going to be in? Because they want him to fight him. They brought him out and they told the media. Okay, great. That makes sense. Why did Francis not then have an equal and opposite story? We've been bringing guys out from the beginning of time. We've had promoters giving a message to the judges to get it right from the beginning of time. We've kept judges quiet. We've kept their names out of it. We kept their faces out. All they got to do is get up and leave that building. Somebody's booing. They don't even know they're booing the guy that's walking out of the building. Like, we've been doing this from the beginning of time. It's not going to stop. So if you're Francis and you look at the pieces and you know you're walking into that environment, much like Fury should have had a counter for the Ukraine that he thinks is going to affect the judges. He knew that ahead of time. He didn't think of it in the last 30 minutes while he's getting his face beat in. He should have countered and attacked that ahead of time, which could have been done in a simple call out. He could have simply called that out. Francis should have had an opponent. Francis could have had a storyline. Francis should have had Fury next. After what he did in getting a split decision, he didn't know what time it was before he went in there. He didn't know what time it was during it. He didn't know what time it is after. So was the fix in? Sure. Did the promoter relay his wishes to the judges, which they all deny happened? Yes, they did it in front of everybody. It's the best place to hide something. Does fix equal conspiracy? Conspiracy equals conversation. I just taught you three things that you never knew. All right, guys, the friendly hacker, right? The story of the friendly hacker. So, remind you on the story. I get hacked on Twitter. Now, I'm a big Twitter guy. I enjoy Twitter, and that does serve as a form of social interaction for me. And I do a whole lot of things out and about of the studio with a whole lot of people. I like it. Losing that for a week, I got to tell you, I missed it. I like the videos. I like to get my news there. It's one of these situations. Well, I hear from the hacker. The hacker sends me a text. And he says, I'll give you your codes back if you want. And he says, I'll give you your codes to your social media and to your email back. Well, at that point, I don't know I have lost my email. I don't know that I don't have my email until he tells me that he will give me my email back. Now, I'm not a big email guy. But what can you do with an email? Like, I knew what he could do with social media because he was doing it. He was tweeting things out. That was it. And he didn't run your typical scam where he's asking people for money or he's trying to raise something. Like, he had a skill. He wanted to show me that he had it. He got a few things off his chest. He was a fight fan. I mean, it was all fight related. He got a few things off his chest, fight related. Has an opinion on something. Like, he turned out like he wasn't a bad guy. So he gets a hold of me and says that I can have these things back. And I don't text him back. I decide for a guy that has these hacking skills that the response of a text message somehow involves me more. But he then goes to the Bad Guy Inc. website, which he's got to search out, comes through the back door, contacts me that way. And I realize, no, man, he's serious. He's really going to give me these codes back. And I want to talk to him. Say, all right, you text me and you email me, so there's some level of contact here. Can you talk to me? And I don't know the answers on that. Like, does he think I'm going to out and trick him or something along these lines? Or can he disguise his voice? Like, is there a way that we can speak? Because I would like to know where the weaknesses were. And I do everything that they say that you're supposed to do. Like, I don't use the same password for any two things. For example, when it gives you an offer to change it ever so often, I do. I do the little things like that. So I just want to know where the weaknesses were, for one. And then two, I wouldn't mind getting his opinion on fighting. Like, when he was tweeting out on my behalf, it was more aggressive than I speak. There was some profanity in there that I wouldn't have used. However, he also had an opinion, and I wouldn't mind asking him why he feels that way. For example, one of the things that he contends, and he holds it against Israel Adesanya, but one of the things that he contends is that Israel Adesanya got too much of a marketing push. That push was unwarranted, but also caused money, and he thought those funds could have gone somewhere else. I would just like to ask him what he's thinking on that. First off, how does he know what the push caused? How does he deem that the guy who won the world title, like, it seems hard to say that you're pushing a guy if he goes on and wins the world championship, it would sound like you identified the correct guy, but this wasn't his opinion. I would just like to hear it, right? You got to have a level of intelligence to pull off what he pulled off. So it's not as though I can just dismiss him as a dum-dum. Okay. So I wrote him back, but I must tell you, when he wrote to me from the email, it turned out it was my own email. When I go to reply, it was the very email that he was giving me back to. So I'm not positive if he still checks and or monitors it. Now, the other thing that he doesn't know, that email I got rid of a year ago, and that's a random number off the top of my head. It might have been a little less time than that. Might have been a little bit more time. But I didn't get rid of it by choice. It was something called Juno. That was one of the original emails when the internet came out. And it is terrible. Juno used to be a real company. They've sold. It's off. You call customer service, man. It's a nightmare to deal with. And I'm probably their only customer. So it's not as though they need to be good to you. They're not even really in the business anymore. But it is an absolute nightmare to get anything done over. So I just walked away. I walked away and said, you know, I'm out. I've been dealing with since the 90s. Screw this Juno account. But where that becomes relevant, I think you guys can relate. There's things that I've signed up for over time that when you have to enter an email, I did. And that was my email. That was my original email since my freshman year in college. It's the only one that I've ever had. So two nights ago, I'm trying to watch Mayor of Kingstown, which is on Paramount Plus. You could do it the regular way, but it's 2 weeks behind. You go to Paramount Plus, you get two extra episodes. It's currently the best show on TV. And it will remain the best show on TV until Yellowstone comes out. And then it's still a debate between those two. It still might be the best show on TV. Can't watch it. Can't watch it because when I go to log in, it'd been a long enough time that I've been out that Paramount Plus does a security check by sending a link to the Juno email, of which I don't have any access. Now, I didn't have access because he took it. I had access because Juno screwed me over. He, when he comes back to me and says, I'll give you your codes back, and then he does. He gives me the codes to email. He now gives me the password that I couldn't even get Juno to give me. I'm one of their longest, I call over there to Bangladesh, I sit on the phone, I do the whole rigmarole. They can't get on the back end of their own interface to give me a password. He hands it to me. Now I can go to Paramount Plus. Now I can watch Mayor of Kingstown. So, for whatever inconvenience the Twitter was, the reconvenience of email, he and I are square. But I would still like to talk to him. And I think it would make for an interesting podcast. So I wrote him back at the email he wrote me from, which I hadn't paid close enough attention. And when I did, I saw it was my own email address. So I don't know if I'm going to be able to contact him, but apparently he watches the show. So if he does, he needs to contact me again somewhere I can respond so I can issue an invite. Who's the bad guy? You know, that never goes away. And there's even some pieces of history or within culture where you have to have that answer right. If you identify the wrong person as the good guy, you could be looked down on. You could be fired from certain jobs. And it's a very interesting spot because how did you get there? And let me give you one, okay? In my mind, Billy the Kid was a good guy. In fact, my son wanted to dress as Billy the Kid for Halloween, and I supported it. And I supported it because I, too, one Halloween was Billy the Kid. Now, Billy the Kid killed a lot of people. Billy the Kid was arrested. As a matter of fact, Billy the Kid escaped from jail and shot the sheriff in the back. So how do you get that he's a good guy? And there's a lot of people that, and I have an answer to that, but I'm just saying, like, if you wanted to look down on me for that, there is another side to the story. And largely it has to do with I watched the show Young Guns, followed by Young Guns Part 2, like the movie, and they portrayed him as a bit of an anti-hero. Now, I don't actually know a lot about Billy the Kid. I wasn't there for Billy the Kid. I just heard these stories. And that, yes, while he escaped from jail and slipped out of the handcuffs because his wrists were bigger than his hands, or so legend goes, and while he did get double buckshot and he did shoot Sheriff Brady, Sheriff Brady was actually a bad guy that got sworn in as a sheriff and arrested Billy the Kid because Billy the Kid and his fellow regulators were doing the true justice that the law was meant to do. In fact, Billy and the other regulators, once upon a time, were deputized themselves. In fact, Billy was given a pardon, at least verbally, by the governor of New Mexico. And therefore, I have decided he was a good guy. But I'd be open to hearing the other. You want to know one? And I don't agree with this one. You want to know a bad guy? Jesse James. Jesse James would rob trains and he would shoot people in the back. He would shoot unarmed people in the back and go take their stuff. But a lot of people have glamorized that. And for a lot of people, Jesse was the good guy. And Jesse and his brother did set out in more of a Robin Hood type fashion. Like, they were from an area that was being abused. That's true. And they were trying to defend their area. That's true. And the money that they were stealing, they were using for good. And they argued they were taking it for bad. Like, it starts to get pretty convoluted. Where you could also say, man, that was a cold-hearted, cowardly serial killer. It starts to get weird. It starts to get interesting. I want to ask you guys one. I give you that whole backstory on the Old West because I want to ask you one. Sammy the Bull, where do you put him? Salvatore, Sammy the Bull, Gravato, where do you put him? Is he a good guy or a bad guy? Now, he killed people, I believe. His official count, of which he had to testify to under oath, was 22 people. Several of which were his friends. And make no mistake, it was murder. He would openly admit. He would set them up. He would bring them places. He would execute them because that was ordered by the underboss. Who many of you are led to believe that John Gotti was a godfather, and you're kind of close on that story, but he was actually an underboss. And that's pretty cold and that's pretty bad. Sammy tells the story and he admitted to it. He killed 22 people and he did a number of years in prison, but he got out. Now, he got out because he went state evidence. He turned John Gotti in and several others. He put a spotlight on the mob. But in exchange for all 22 of those murders, he was going to get out of jail. He wasn't going to die there. As a matter of fact, he did get out of jail. I believe it was in 2019. If I'm wrong, it was 2017. He lives in Arizona. Mafia said they were coming for him. Sammy the Bull said, come get me. Here's where I'm at. Told him the address. And he said the reason he's telling the address is because he does not want them thinking they're going to sneak up on him, thinking that he thinks he's protected. He openly said, I know I am not protected. In the same way as you're looking for me and you're looking to come for me, I'm looking for you too. Now, I don't know what you've done. I don't know what you're capable of doing. But you know what I've done, and you know what I am capable of doing. So come on down. If you like the nice weather, I'm in Arizona. It was very interesting. And Sammy now has a YouTube channel. I believe it's called Table in the Back. And he tells these stories. He recounts them. And not all of them does he make himself to be the hero, such as, okay, well, this guy was doing really bad things. Now, he only killed bad people. I know that I keep saying that, but I'm saying that because I want your opinion of if he was a good guy or a bad guy. He only killed bad people. He didn't necessarily kill people that were worse than him, but he only killed bad people. And a number of those men were fathers whose children are now grown up. I watched an interview with these two girls. Sammy killed their dad, but their dad had been responsible for killing other guys. Not to mention moving drugs, not to doing a number of bad things. Now, somewhere within the underworld, they broke the code. They spoke. They ratted to somebody. There was some reason John Gotti decided to give the order that they go. But then Sammy the Bull revealed that about John Gotti, got him locked up. John Gotti was, in fact, a bad guy, and Sammy was the one that put him away. Wouldn't that make him a good guy? And the one problem that you have is whenever you have an anti-hero, that anti-hero must have a code, and they must fiercely adhere to that code, whether that code is a normal code, whether it even goes within line of policies, structures, and or laws. Whatever the code is, they must adhere to their own code, and he broke it. He broke it by ratting. but he ratted because he felt Gotti had broken the code first and John had even ordered a hit on Sammy the Bull. So I'm just asking you the question. When you have somebody that will admit their wrongdoing, that will admit their bad acts, that comes out and tells other people, do not be like me. Do not think I was a hero. Do not try to copy me. You don't want to do what I've done. You don't want to give parts of your life to the correction facilities. You don't want to have set up your own friends. You don't want to have pulled the trigger. But the other side of it was because they all, as a pack, had agreed to a certain code. And they all knew if they broke the code and it was found out by the underboss, in this case, John Gotti, that an order would be given by somebody likely Sammy the Bull, and they were only going to handle it one way. So with all of that in mind, I'm not trying to influence you. I'm sincerely trying to ask you. So I will find myself watching Sammy, and I'll find myself listening to him, and I'll find myself believing him. Like all stories, there's two different sides, right? But I find myself listening to him. I sense a real honesty from him. I sense a real sincerity from him. Does that make me a sucker? Is Salvatore Sammy the Bull Gravato a good guy or a bad guy? All right, everybody, that's it for today's episode. Thank you for listening. And a big thank you and a big shout out to everyone who's leaving me reviews on Apple Podcasts. I am headed out for the weekend, but I'm going to be back on Tuesday to discuss UFC Denver. We got Rose in a big showdown, which could turn into a number one contenders match. Till then, everybody, I'm Chael Sonnen, and you are welcome.
Life can always use more Cedar Point. And right now, you can get more Cedar Point for less with the Fun Day Bundle for just $74.99. Each bundle gets you admission, parking, and all-day dining for one low price. That means more coasters like Steel Vengeance and more nostalgic fun in the boardwalk area. But you better hurry because this bundle won't last. Save now at CedarPoint.com.